Hey, it's Timmy Whispers from Stacey King's Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track, all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. I'm planning on going river rafting this weekend, and I'm ready to head out on the trails with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Episode 84, Give Me the Hot Sauce, rolls on. It is now our pleasure and privilege to welcome in the head coach and general manager of the WNBA champion Chicago Sky, James Wade, joins us on Give Me the Hot Sauce. And coach, I'm sure you never get tired of being introduced as head coach of the WNBA champions. Take us back through that process last year during the playoff run. You guys were a 500 team during the regular season. You caught fire at the perfect time.
No, it never gets old. You know, thank you for having me. That was a special moment because that's something that has never been done before. And, you know, we've had teams in the history of our league that go on runs, finish with a record above 500, and they get there, but they never won it. And for us to finish the job, it's a big difference in just make it to the finals and winning it. And, you know, to actually be the last team standing, it was just about our buy-in and our trust in one another, not just in the system, but in each other. And you started to see that throughout the playoffs after we won one game and then after we won a second game. And so it just started to build our momentum and build our confidence in each other. It was a rough season because we started off behind the eight ball with like three of our main players injured. Mm-hmm. And so we had went on a stretch where we lost like seven in a row. And once everybody got healthy, we went on another run where we won seven in a row. So really nobody knew who we were. And then we kind of had our, you know, peaks and valleys throughout the season. And like we didn't reach 500 to like the last game of the season because we had lost three out of four or something like that. And we just, you know, decided amongst each other, and we changed some things schematically that I felt that would make us a little bit more of the aggressive team. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like a person in a fight that, you know, that doesn't have strength left. They have one punch left and we just decide to throw a big one. You know? Yeah. That's what we did. Yeah. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the expectations. Now, you won the championship. There was buzz when you guys, you know, were out here celebrating, and everybody was so excited. The playoff run, the fans came out and supported. Coming into this season now, and the expectations now are up. You're not surprising anybody. Everybody knows who the Chicago Sky is now because you're the world champions. Tell me what the expectations were like, and what was that first training camp like being champion?
So it was pretty... I thought it was pretty cool. We went through a funny like off season because we celebrated, and then 2 months later we had free agency, and we had seven free agents. And so basically, you know, it was about trying to secure our core. And so we had a lot of work that we had to do in December, January, and February months where we were trying to put our team together. And it was evident because of the WNBA's hard cap, we couldn't keep everybody.
Yeah.
And so, and after that, you know, good feeling wears off. You know, it's like, yeah, we won. Now, you know, let's run this back. And we have a hard cap. And so you have to sacrifice, you know, money and, you know, what players worth on the open market and playing with the right team. And it's just tough, you know. And so that was what we had to navigate and bring in the team that we brought together. And we feel like we you know, put our team in a good place where we brought back all five of our starters. Three of them were free agents. And so they wanted to, you know, run it back. And we were able to, you know, bring in another finals MVP from Washington, D.C., that won finals MVP in 2019. We got a couple of free agents via trade, a free agent from overseas. And we felt like we had a team that could potentially compete for a championship. And so it's a little different because you have five starters and seven total players come back that were on the championship team. Then you have new players that are hungry. And so you're just trying to mesh that all in. And so once you have players coming back from overseas, training camp is a little delayed because some of your main players are coming back later. So you're just trying to get everything in. So the thing we decided to do early was, okay, the thing we can do is build our defensive identity. And so that's what we tried to do early. But we struggled offensively early because a lot of our players weren't in. And when they were coming in, we had to keep on scripting stuff to kind of get the offense flowing. But we hung our hat early on defense. And now the last, I think, couple of weeks since our team has been pretty much here and intact, we focused a lot offensively and what, you know, what we're trying to accomplish offensively. So it's a process, man. And that's the WNBA, especially when you got overseas and all that. It's not just, training camp that you have for 4 to 6 weeks where you can, you know, kind of build your team. You're adding pieces on as you go because players are they're filling in later. And that's the challenging part of WNBA, but hopefully one day we won't have that problem and players will just be playing here in market.
Yeah, Stacey, he wears both hats. So when the player wants to complain to the general manager, they got nowhere to go because he's the coach and the general manager. He's the final authority on everything.
And that's a great thing to have, you know, because I was like that in the CBA. And the CBA and the WNBA is very similar because you have a salary cap. I've had guys leave at halftime, coach. So they said, hey, I'm going to Germany. I'm like, wait a minute, hold up, man. What are you talking about, man? You can't go to Germany? Coach, they paying me more money, you know. And I people laugh. You know, we laugh about that, but it was dead serious, you know, because you have to compete with the overseas market because these players make so much more money overseas. And in the CBA, guys are trying to get to the NBA. You know, they're missing something in particular in the game to get to the NBA. And the one thing I've always said about the WNBA, because the NBA backs them, you know, these girls shouldn't have to go overseas and play. I mean, now, especially when you look at Brittany Griner and her situation and how dangerous it is. I mean, she's been over there way too long. And these girls put themselves in danger going over, you know, overseas and playing in Europe.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's tough. I actually coached her for 3 years there in Russia, man. And it's one day it's going to come to a time where they're not going to have to go. And we feel like right now with the viewership, even from our final series, how it exploded. And this year we've already had a game this year where we've beaten records as far as how much audience has watched us on ABC. And that's been more than in years past. And so we feel that, you know, each year that we've added four more games to the market schedule. And we think that's only going to go even further. And they're going to add two teams in the next couple of years. So this thing is going to be a major league where players, they're probably going to stay over here and be in market. And I think, you know, we're going to start seeing players get the recognition that they deserve. And I just assume that with that recognition, then you'll see everything else that follows. So I think we're just in the beginning of something special. So I'm just excited to be a part of it for real.
Yeah, Coach, I wanted to ask you about coaching Candace Parker. She played the bulk of her career with the LA Sparks, of course, won a championship, was the league most valuable player. And I covered her when she played high school basketball at Naperville Central, and she was such a dominant high school player. It was unbelievable. But the question I had is, She's making more money working for TNT than she is playing for the WNBA. She comes into training camp, and a lot of people, I think, looked at it as, all right, she's just winding down her career. She's going to come home for a year and, you know, play in front of her family and friends and not be that serious about it. But she was one of those players you talked about that was injured early in the year. What's the dynamic for you trying to make sure you get the best of Candace Parker at this point in her career?
I mean, it's like that, man. You have somebody that has basically carried the league for so long. You know, just imagine LeBron James, if he's doing something extracurricular, you know he's still going to bring everything he can to the basketball court. It's a level of professionalism and talent and skill that can't really be matched. So it's just endless energy, man. She's really good at what she does on TV. Yeah. I like tuning in and watching her, but, you know, coaching her is on another level, and that's something that I've appreciated. And you hate preparing against her when I was coaching against her, but you love coaching her because you know she's going to bring it at every turn. And she's someone that has invested in keeping her body right. She has the right people around her, making sure she's ready to play. And so some things that you have to, you know, you have to, I guess, understand that this is actually bigger than what we're doing, because she's an icon on the women's mm-hmm. level, and whatever she does actually brings light to us. You know, we're like first or second, and they had something today, like we're first or second in I guess viewership or streams or clicks or followers in the last like 7 days of WNBA teams. 4 years ago, before I got here, that wasn't the case when it came to Chicago Sky. Now we're one of the major ball clubs that's, you know, in a major market. So it's something that comes with the territory when you have her. So you got to take all that good stuff that she brings and just try to help your team grow in the best way possible.
Well, I tell you what, watching a women's basketball game is awesome. You know, when you're having kids growing up and wanting to learn how to play basketball the right way, the fundamentals, the passing, the cutting, it's a great tool to teach young kids how to play. I used to take my kids all the time to the Sky games when they first got here. You know, one of the things I was watching last night, Coach, the 30 for 30, and they were talking about the and that was a great, I don't know if you saw it, but that was.
No, I haven't. TV, oh, TVR, man. So that I have was, it on my TV right now.
I'm telling you, that was awesome. And just watching with those, just like you were just talking about, you know, Candace shining light and these superstar players coming along, shining light on the women's game, getting more people involved and getting people. Those girls were the first ones to really got women's basketball. They're the reasons why there's a WNBA. And seeing some of the things that those girls went through, and the good, the bad, the ugly, it was an amazing story. And so I concur with you when you say, you know, how a girl like Candace Parker, Sylvia Fowles, you know, some of these superstar women's basketball players are the out in the forefront to take this game to the next level. So this group may not benefit from it, but that next couple of groups that come in will benefit. It's the same thing in the men's game. I mean, you go back to Bob Cousy and Bill Russell and how those guys traveled and things. And you see where the league is now, the money that's being made now. I mean, guys making $20, $30 million a year, where back in the day, guys had, they played in the NBA and then went and worked a 9-to-5 or a side job. Yeah. So the game has evolved. And I see the women's game doing the same thing. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I feel the same way. And it's like you said, it's going to be, Like you said, it's going to be the guys like, you know, George Mikan and Bob Cousy take it to one place, and they have this period where, okay, you have two competing leagues, and then you have Magic and Larry, and you have the fusion of the ABA and the NBA, and now you got all these big contracts with LeBron, and so it steps to it, and we just have to appreciate it along the way. As much, you know, like Cheryl Swoops and Dawn Staley, appreciating them and what they've done, Lisa Leslie, et cetera. And, you know, Dinah Taurasi and Candace Parker, Sue Bird has carried this torch. But the players that are maybe, you know, in the 10th, 11th grade now that we don't know about, and they're going to reap the benefits of it. Like they're going to be millionaires playing in the league that don't have to go overseas. And so it's the players now and the players before that have paved the way, and hopefully they'll always be able to pay homage to them and with, you know, stuff like they showed last night, and just so we can have an appreciation, man. And you know, in the NBA, you see the appreciation is there too. So I love what it's building. I think it's going to be that way pretty soon.
Hey, Coach, a lot of Sky fans probably don't realize that you were a hell of a player in your own right. You played for 13 years overseas. You played in a couple of different countries. And you make your off-season home in France. That has to be an interesting life for yourself and your family. Tell us about your playing career. What were you like as a player?
I wasn't that good, man. I just put it like this. If I was that good, I wouldn't have to get on a plane. it was good. I loved the game. I was very passionate for it. And I had an extremely, hard work ethic. And before it was even in style, you know, like I used to work out with different coaches, or they'll see me running and be like, what is he doing? You know, and we didn't have the trainers and the individual trainers that, you know, you had to go search for these guys. You had to get your uncle to rebound for you.
Yep.
Back in the day. It really wasn't, you know, it really wasn't like that. And I was like, man, I was born before my time, because this is stuff that I wanted to do. I used to have my little brother in the gym, rebounding. He's 14 years old. I was like, I'm going to come off this screen right here. And every time I get it, just, you know, and now you see guys that's putting guys to workouts. And we didn't really have that. And our coaches used to, in the off season, go on the recruiting trail. So they didn't do off season workouts really. But I was fortunate enough to go overseas. And back then it was, you would go overseas and it was two Americans for every team. It really wasn't like Bosmans or, you know, like European American guys with European passports and stuff like that. And, you know, it's leagues like first, second, third. Yep. So normally you start off low and you just work your way up. And, so I was fortunate enough. I played in six countries and, was trying to find my home. So I played on a couple of good teams, played on a couple of bad teams. But through it all, it was some good lessons. And I got to make some great friends, some teammates that are going to be friends for life. And it was good. I wouldn't trade it for anything, because it's something that, you know, it helped me, you know, find my family, find my wife who was a French basketball player, played in the Olympics and all that, and have my son. And it opened me up to a lot of things. You know, I'm a dude from the South that didn't speak proper English, and now I speak three languages. So it's just changed. You know, this is something I never would have thought, man. I never would have thought. So, you know, it changed my life for the better, man. And as much as it helped me, realize all my dreams, it actually grew me up as an individual, where I was a lot more open-minded than I would have been if I would have stayed in Memphis, you know.
Well, James Stacy speaks French also.
Oh, man. No, don't listen to him, Coach. Don't listen to him. I'm an imposter. I only know dirty words. That's all I know. I only know dirty words.
Hey, dirty words, sometimes those are the ones that count, brother.
Those are the ones that count, baby. Hey, so yeah, thank you for that little things whisper. Chris is always trying to, you know.
Parlez-vous, come on.
Parlez-vous français, oui. Okay, so give me a taste of what it's like coaching women and men. Because I know hoop is hoop. You got players, you know, that's the way I look at it. I mean, you're coaching high-level girls like you're coaching in the WNBA. Hooping is hooping. But how is it different? There has got to be some difference to it.
I mean, not really. It's a whole bunch of, misconceptions that, you know, but it's really the same, really. They want to be told the truth, you know, like you said earlier. You just have to keep it real with them. And you can motivate them, but it has to be truth in that. And they want to know exactly what they need to do. And some players are just, okay, give us instruction and we do it. But the great players, sometimes they want to know why, because they've been in so many different situations that are different, you know. And I'm sure it's the same with the men. I'm sure you can tell a younger player, hey, just do this. But with LeBron, he's been in so many situations, you're going to have to tell him, hey, let's do this. This is what, you know. So it's a little bit of the same. I think just me being a guy and going in and being in the basketball world and understanding what I wanted from a coach, That's how I just try to feed my experience from that. It's the same, man. Same emotion, same, you know, same buy-in. It's just we're on a different scale because, you know, these guys, man, some of them are corporations. And, you know, it's I mean, from what I've heard, is sometimes it's harder for them to get them to buy in. It's not hard to get our players because it's all about winning, really. It's all about winning.
Yeah, that's big now because it's all about brands. Everybody, you know, in the NBA, it's about your brand.
Yeah.
And it's kind of taken away from the game of what's important because is the brand more important than winning? You know what I'm saying? And and that's where I think some of the teams that don't have success in the NBA struggle with that.
I mean, think about it. Like I imagine like you're coaching these $100 million CEOs of companies, you know, and they CEOs of their bodies, and you're trying to all get them on the same page. But me as a coach, man, I'm like, it's probably a detriment to myself, but I just put winning above everything. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. And sometimes it's going to rub people the wrong way. And I think I don't know how coaching guys on the NBA level is, and you know, I'm good where I'm at, but I mean, the women, man, they really are passionate about the game and about winning the right way. The players that I've coached.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in other teams. I've heard stories, but you hear those everywhere.
Yeah.
But we're fortunate enough, man. We have good people and they're all about winning. And of course you see the branding growing because it's even growing on the college level.
Yes.
You see all these NIL deals and in women's basketball, it's a little different because sometimes you can have NIL deals and sometimes it's more of a popularity contest. And sometimes a lot of these, I mean, not a lot, but sometimes the players can't play in the league. And so you have these great deals in college, but you get to the WNBA level because we don't have 350 spots or 400 spots. We only have 144 at the most.
Wow.
And yeah. And so because we only have 12 teams and because of the salary cap, that cuts it down. So some teams are carrying 11 like us. So you only have 137 spots. So you have these great players in college that come out and are very popular, 60, 70, 80, 100,000 followers. And they get into the league and it's difficult for them because the players that play in the league, branding is secondary. They are ballers.
Yeah.
And the branding comes after you ball. But when you're in college, the branding comes early. Like it comes in high school. And so it looks, you know, it looks bad if you got all these followers and they know you for balling and all these highlights, and then you get in the league and can't play. Mm.
Hey, last question I have for you, James. You have an interesting dynamic that a couple of your backcourt stars, Courtney Vandersloot and Allie Quigley, are married. How does that manifest itself in day-to-day practices and sideline huddles when you're in a one-point game? They ever go at each other in practice, or how does that all work?
Man, they're so competitive. And of course, they go at each other, they go at everybody, they go at me. They're so competitive, man. I've had like the fortune of knowing them for a long time. And like, you know, I coached both of them overseas as well. And so I spent a lot of time with them, and the chemistry that they have on the court playing together, you know, you see it and you're like, man, they're great. Like they just feed off of each other. You have a shooter, you have a facilitator, a shooter that can facilitate and a facilitator that can shoot, and they just feed off each other, and we move at their rhythm a lot. And you know, you wouldn't know that they were married, but it would explain why their chemistry is so good, you know? So it's like, oh yeah, they're married, but it makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
And, because, you know, they're throwing no-look dimes to each other. And like, it's just so great. But I promise it's like a second thought. We don't even think about it anymore.
Sure.
Because they've always been like so involved in the team dynamic. And so we have one of the best groups that you could imagine. And they help that. Candace helps that. So it's been pretty cool. They're two of our leaders along with Candace and Copper. You know, we got some others too that have really done the thing. Z, you know, came back and is trying to, you know, find her voice in the team and stuff. And no, it's been great, man. It's been great having a group. And, you know, I guess, you know, when they retire, I'll look for another married couple, maybe.
It sounds like great strategy for a guy who is also not just the coach, but the general manager of the WNBA champion Chicago Sky. James, thank you so much for joining us. Keep the success going. I know you guys are undefeated in the Commissioner's Cup, so you can bring in another trophy coming up. So.
I'm coming, baby. I'm coming out there waving the Chicago Sky towel, baby.
Hey, man. Let's do it. Let's do it, man.
Good luck, Coach.
Great getting to know James Wade, our guest on episode 84 of Give Me the Hot Sauce. I want to thank you all for tuning in. A brand new episode coming up again next week. So, Stacey, what do you always tell the folks?
Drive home safely, Chicago. Beep, beep.
Give me the hot sauce. What are you doing?